Hello, mech fans around the world, and those that aren't fans yet, and welcome to Mobile Suit Fandom, the podcast where you two largely inept but prone to love co-hosts Fuzzy, that'd be me, and Chris watch, summarize, critique, and make fun of the entirety of the Gundam franchise from beginning to end. This is episode 33, and we'll be talking about episode 33 of Mobile Suit Gundam 0079, Farewell Inside 6, in which we, ironically, fall out of love, but then also fall deeper into love later for different reasons. It's a complicated day. Moe agare, and take it away. Pray to sweet Jesus that you do. Hello, everyone! And welcome to Mobile Suit Fandom. I decided not to interrupt in the middle of Chris's sentence because...
You interrupted yourself.
Yeah, well, it, sort of. Yeah, welcome to Mobile Suit Fandom again. This is episode 32? 3?
33!
33! Haha. Today we're talking about a not... fuck, my brain is mixing
episode
my...
Episode 33. Yeah, this isn't the intro. You gotta do the intro.
I know.
Later.
I recognize that, but what I mean is, after watching the next time on from this episode,
yeah.
I'm, like, really excited because... First of all, only 10 more episodes of this show.
Yeah, it's fucking wild. Like... I never thought, like I knew the plan was to just watch everything, but like...
Now you're coming up against the first one.
It seemed like so many episodes just in Mobile Suit Gundam.
Right.
But we're getting there. We're almost, I've almost watched one whole Gundam.
You've almost watched an entire Gundam.
And then I've spent, so let's see, for every episode we record an hour and a half... So,
yes.
2 hours per episode.
Yeah.
I've listened to 66. I've done 66 hours of Mobile Suit Gundam.
Yeah. And it's only going to get worse. honest to God, I'm half expecting, like, the next 10 episodes to maybe go longer, even. Okay, Chris. The next,
I made a promise.
I know. The next 10 episodes, less so this one, so the next 9 episodes, I should say.
Okay.
So much fucking stuff happens.
Oh, no.
So yeah, much like, happens.
As we've been, like, listening to these and recording these, you keep telling me, like, oh, it'll come up later. Oh, this, don't worry, this will come up later in the series. Oh, this will also come up later.
We're coming the whole time up to later. Here, like, this is later. This is it. The later I've constantly been talking about starts
upon
now.
The later hath cometh.
The later hath come. The tomorrow
on my
we've
face,
always
neck
put
and
our shit off of to has arrived. The pigs are flying, motherfucker.
Well, I guess. My body is ready, I guess. Let's
start with this one.
Let's do this. This is, the episode is called Farewell Inside 6.
Yep. Japanese, it's called The Aggression of Konskon, who is our primary antagonist for this episode, and the next couple, I think. He's a punk ass.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
Of him. Like, the problem is they've had such good villains. You have, like, Garma, who's, like, kind of a... He's kind of coddled, but he wants real hard.
He wants to be good, yeah.
Yeah. You got Char, who's just a fucking garbage fire. Like, the...
Yes, Char. Char is the masked bisexual garbage fire that Char is.
Yeah. We've had the best... He's not even a villain. He's just working for the wrong side. Rambaral and Haman, the wonderful. Makuve is even, like, kind of dastardly a piece of shit,
Makuve,
you know?
Makuve has the appeal that he is so clever. And
yeah.
So,
and he's,
like,
also fucking evil.
Yeah, like, Makuve
is a mustache twirly asshole, except he's got the bite to back it up, right?
Yeah. And then, sorry.
Well, and then we get to this guy.
Well, and I think we've had one more that I keep forgetting about. The guy, the old man who, like, fucking got out and tried to murder some motherfuckers in Izaku 1. Like, he didn't last long, but he fucking tried something.
Yeah, even our one-off villains, such as Konskin, such as that guy with Izaku 1 in, like, the third episode, or...
Yeah.
The guy, or, last episode, even, that guy who was like, I'm gonna try some shit. They tried some shit! And they paid for it dearly. But,
yeah,
they did try. And they tried this guy, interesting things.
This guy seems like, this didn't work immediately? Goodness.
Konskin has one clever idea, and he's hoping that the surprise will carry him the rest of the way. And, spoiler alert, it doesn't.
His plan is the equivalent of jumping out from around the corner going boo and hoping you can kill a person before they can retaliate.
Yeah, that's actually a great example, because on average, that might work. On average, I'd be willing to bet if you hid in an alley in New York City and just kept jumping out at people and stabbing them, you'd get away with it a few times.
Yeah, until you run into one of them that's fucking psychic.
Yes, then you run into a guy trained in psychic martial arts and then fucking teleports behind you. Oh my, one more.
It's a transmission.
And you fucking explode.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's let's deep dive.
Yes. So last time, as we mentioned, Dren, a guy who tried something, got his shit packed in and sucked into space.
That happened. But he definitely got that's fucking brutal. He definitely got sucked out into space and died. He didn't blow up. Mm-hmm. Motherfucker got sucked out into space and died.
Died. Well, and I know he probably did explode, because that's what happens to you when you get sucked into space.
Decompression, yeah. Well, it wasn't fast, is my point. I guess it's fast, just not relatively fast. Anyways, point is...
He froze to death, and then his blood boiled, and then he exploded in that order. And it was terrible the whole time he was dying. I really want you to be aware of this, dear listener and Chris. It hurt the whole time he was dying.
We dedicated a lot of time to this last episode, so I don't need to touch on it again, but I'm gonna, which is that Amuro took out a fucking fleet of warships.
And we're gonna talk about it again today, because holy fuck. So, yeah, I will argue that, like, last time was the presentation of evidence, and this time is just a recap of that same evidence. Because he doubles the fuck down, Amuro. So, the episode proper starts after the title card, and we cut to the region where Side 1, which crashed into Australia, now, where Side 1 was, and is now where a asteroid base named Solomon is located. Solomon is where the younger of the Zabi brothers, Dozel Zabi, the middle brother, technically, but the young one's kind of dead.
He's the youngest one now.
Yes, he is the youngest one.
He got demoted.
I actually don't know if he's the younger or the older. I always think of him as younger because... he's dumber than Giren.
He's a big dum-dum.
Yes, he is... Well, I'm not sure if I can say he's dumb. Because he is still the commanding general of the army.
Yeah, that's not nepotism at all, I'm sure.
Well, okay, even counting nepotism, which is rampant in Zeon, don't misunderstand. It's
all the leaders of all their military are the same family. That's
right. But
it's nepotism. Well, I guess it's a principality, so it's led by a not.
Well, so Garma is stated to have graduated pretty high in his class from a military academy.
Yeah.
Giran is super intelligent. You don't become Space Hitler by being an idiot.
Spittler.
Giran is very much Space Hitler.
Spittler.
And... fucking... And Caecilia is also shown to be an incredibly cunning and intelligent woman.
Yeah.
On top of Papa Zabi, Degwin Zabi, and his monster Dong, between him and his monster Dong,
His lead advisor, Monster Dong.
Yes. Is still running a country, by all accounts. Yeah. And frankly, up until Whitebase entered the fray, was winning that war.
Yeah.
So I don't think Dozel is an idiot, but amongst a family of cunning, backstabbing super geniuses, yeah.
So he's like low end genius.
Yes, like he's probably barely meeting the genius line, but he's still a genius.
For the record, a Whole Foods, and he's a Walmart. Basically,
I would compare it more to his family is Whole Foods and he is Central Market, or more accurately, the natural food section of an HEB. clearly shipped from another store. These regional jokes.
I think HEB is only the South.
It is only Texas, so I don't know how to better explain that, because that's such a Because, like, Kroger doesn't match that, nor does any Safeway product.
We're getting a bit far afield again.
Fair.
Well, I think everybody understands.
You don't want to talk about regional grocery stores for an hour, Chris? That's not the kind of hot content the Tomino's come to us for?
Real talk. Oh, shit. Pretty soon, I'm going to get to show two British people to both Waffle House and a Cracker Barrel, and I am so fucking excited. Like,
God, I wish I could teleport to that Waffle House.
I legitimately love and adore Waffle House, and I'll hear no ill words. If you have a problem with Waffle House, you're engaging with it wrong.
Yeah, both of us have sworn blood oaths of fealty to Waffle House. Like,
Waffle House is... I love Waffle House like I love char. Like,
yeah.
You know, you have to understand it.
The thing about Waffle House is it is there for you when nothing else will be. And I do mean that literally.
And it's $7 for 1,200 calories.
And it's $7 for literally enough food for the rest of the day. You can eat there in the morning, and then you don't need to eat again. You're done.
But
you're finished for the day.
You can. They have lunch options, too.
But you can come back and then do it again!
And then Cracker Barrel.
24 hours a day. There's a cast of characters who live and work there. They don't live there, but they might as well. It's a beautiful microcosm of the human experience. And if for some reason you live near a Waffle House and you haven't drunkenly gone to Waffle House at 4 in the morning, please get yourself into an altered state and go to Waffle House at the crack of dawn.
Yeah, prime real estate is somewhere between like 2 a.m. and like 5 a.m.
Yeah.
5 a.m. is pushing it. I would go 4.
2 and 4, I would almost argue 1 and 4 are the sweet hours, but after 2, you get the bar closed crowd.
Yeah, so that's what I was saying, is like people who close down bars start trickling in too. The overnight crew, we need to have a completely different podcast where we just talk about Waffle House.
Welcome to Mobile Waffle House, where we just talk about Waffle House for hours at a time.
I fucking could. Waffle House is amazing. Anyways.
So, we cut to Dozel Zabi.
And Dozel hates Char.
Dozel super hates Char. It's not really clear why at this stage.
Well, don't they all think he, like, killed, kind of engineered the death of Garma?
Yes, the zombies okay. all take personal offense that Char was present and did not save Garma. Caecilia recognizes Char is fucking good at his job, and so kept him anyway.
Plus, she was probably planning on killing Garma anyways, or using him as a pawn for something. Hello?
So, no, I got quiet on purpose, because I want you to remember those words you said.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, keep them in mind in...
later?
Later. For the later block. I think, like, five episodes, maybe? Maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We'll get there.
Oh, buddy, you have no idea. So, yeah, we learn that Dozel fucking hates Char, and he wants to personally go after Whitebase, however, mostly to prove that Char a punk ass. He can't, because the Tiamen fleet that we have been cock-teased about for episode after episode, it feels like, is on its way towards Solomon, and so he can't really spare a bunch of people. It is clear he can spare a couple, though, as he sends a couple seven. A couple three battle cruisers. Three battle cruisers, one of them's red. No, Char's not in that one.
Yeah, that was a real fucking psych out.
Yeah, yeah, it really was. Like,
I saw it, I'm like, ooh, he's there!
That's the one! It wasn't. It's not the one. The red one.
From now on, like, we're gonna get to fucking Gundam Wing. I'm gonna see heavy arms and just be constantly confused of why Char's not in it. Just every red Gundam from now until the end of time. Was it the second Tall Geese? Wasn't it also red? That's piloted by the kind of Char. The off-brand Char.
It is piloted by. Zex does pilot the second Tall Geese. Fucking God, there's a lot over there. There are four other Char clones to get to before we get to that one.
Holy shit, I've missed so much, Fuzzy. Okay.
So meanwhile, over at Whitebase, and just for the record so that you, the listener, are also aware, yeah, you are like 20-ish minutes in, and we're still, like, maybe 5 seconds into the episode.
You've listened to 32 episodes by now. You know that we're good. Fucking bad at this.
Yes. So over at near-ish White Base, Sayla, Amuro, and Kai are running patrols in an asteroid field. Amuro wants to patrol some more. Kai is running low on fuel, so he ollies out. Sayla is like, yeah, sure, we can keep patrolling out here in this big old G-armor. So she pulls up a big board of some techno board that makes typewriter noises. I'm not making that up. It's a big techno board. It's clearly meant to be, you know, the late 70s imagination of an iPad makes typewriter noises.
Tech, 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 tech.
Yeah. So she leans back, she starts to do that, and of course she wants to talk about that hot, hot goss! Because I love Sayla, and she's always like this. This is who Sayla is, and I identify with it on a personal and emotional level. Because of course, it's like, yeah, we can keep patrolling. She sits back, she crosses her legs, she gets her iPad out, she does not pilot the ship, and she goes, so, how do you feel about Frabo? I just love the way this conversation starts, because, like, this is something, I have this old RPG character I know and love. From one of my characters, it was actually in a game with Chris's wife, who was the gossipiest noble you ever did see, and I'm now realizing I based a lot of this off Sayla. I just wholesale ripped off elements of Sayla.
Nice. And I mean, that's all creativity is. like spinning things you've ripped off of other people.
Good artist borrow, great artist steal. I'm not really much of an artist. So, Sayla observes Amuro's been a little cold to Frabo lately, and, you know, he gives some waffling answers that amount to effectively nothing, and Sayla definitely keeps pressing him on it, until Amuro notices a glint off to the side. We cut over to what he sees, and it's a weird-looking mobile armor with a team of clearly Zeon scientists working on it.
Yep.
It's an awkward moment, to say the least. Everyone feels very strange about it. The scientists immediately jump inside and just kind of hope that they didn't get seen. Amuro immediately turns the ship around and, like, notices a little thing coming up over an asteroid. And is like, fucking, what is that? And then the thing shoots at him. He takes offense to this.
And you know, the one thing you don't want to do when you're in a confrontation with Amuro Ray when he's in the Gundam.
Yeah, is make him take offense to your existence.
Do not, yes. Because he will end that existence.
He will change
He will suck you out into space and explode you.
Yes, yes. He will kill you and it will hurt the whole time you're dying. So, that weird looking mobile armor thing does manage to get a shot off and blows a shield off of the G-armor. It proceeds to launch, and apparently it's, like, kind of damaged or not really functioning properly, and we learn its name. It's called the Bra-Bro. Bra-Bro.
Yeah.
Bra-Bro.
Yeah. Bra with a W and then bro.
Not Frabo. Bra-Bro.
Yeah. Unless that's a weird translation thing, they had to know what they were doing. I think the thing is, they get to the point of this show where they're like, fuck it, we're not making up new names for anything.
Yeah.
Pick a thing we've already named and change it a little bit. Zok, Zagok, Zok. Boom. Done. Okay, this thing's new. What do we need to name it? We've got Frabo. Bravo! 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 Bro.
Oh god. That was a weird thing to see. I immediately every time a mobile armor comes up, I'm always like, I forget what this thing's equipped with, so I go to the wiki page, and of course the first thing I always notice is the what does this suit get developed into later? Apparently someone decides to combine the Zaccarello and the Bra-Bro at one point in a side, like, just for some reason, Gundam has a whole sub thing of making just random designs in universe that are not canon and never appear in the shows. They just exist for your enjoyment? Which is interesting and I like it, but also why? I don't have an answer. I'm asking.
I don't either.
Tomino, at me, please. Tomino.
Not Tomino's, but Tomino.
Yeah, singular. So, the Bra-Bro...
Capital T, Tomino.
Yeah. Bra-Bro looks kind of weird. It's got, like, three things. It's got six things jutting off of it. It looks kind of like a six-point star.
It's got a big old booty.
It's got... She thick, though. Yeah, it's kind of just weird. Excuse me, it's only got four appendages and a big quad thruster ass.
But two of those appendages do have twice the number of spiky bits that the other two do.
Yes.
So, they've got six spiky bits.
There are six total seven if you count the front spiky bit.
Well, that's a beak.
That's a beak.
That's a schnoz.
So...
this thing's fucking weird and I don't understand it.
It is?
I don't think I like it.
It's
not weird like the Gun Parry. The Gun Parry's weird and like a doofy... Look at that idiot flying, man. Yeah.
That said...
this thing, I don't know.
Well, that said, this thing introduces a concept that's super important for literally every other UC Gundam show we will watch.
It's a brain ship.
Kind of, yeah.
It uses your brain powers.
Well, at this point, it is not confirmed. And... Okay. I'm going to tell you this first in-universe and then out. Within okay. what we know so far, this is okay. a weird ship that has guns that can disconnect from the main body and be on wires that then can yep. also be, like, controlled via small thrusters to aim while yeah. still being linked to the main ship.
Yep.
This introduces the concept of firing lines that don't make a lot of sense. Yes, the main body of the thing you want to kill is there, but you're getting shot from six other places.
Yeah.
This will keep coming up almost forevermore. Like, this yeah, is I remember a very
in,
important
in Unicorn, thing. there's a suit that's their whole thing, is a million of these fucking drone thingies.
Is it the purple one?
I think so. Yeah, the yeah. woman piloted yep. it, I think.
Yep, okay. I know which one you're talking about.
The woman. I promise I'm not sexist. I don't know any of their names, and she was the only female pilot that I saw
yeah, no,
in the two episodes I watched.
You're right. That and just... Yes, it's not a perfect anime, and there's no. not a lot of female cast. That said, the female cast we do have is a strong female cast.
Yeah.
Which... Kudos, Tomino. Kudos. Yeah. But, out of universe, I will just straight up tell you, magic, psychic bullshit is heavily involved. There's a whole
yeah.
dumb shit reasoning system behind these, they're called Psy-Kamu systems. We haven't been officially introduced to them yet, but I'm just gonna tell you now, this is probably like the second most common thing in UC Gundam. Like, almost all Universal Century Gundam uses Psy-Kamu bullshit, because
Whoa.
the major thing of UC Gundam is the space noids and the new types and all this shit, right? So the new yeah. type psychic powers are a repeated offender within this series. So this is our first time actually seeing that on screen. Which also heavily implies that one of the pilots on the Bra-Bro is another psychic.
Some psychic bullshit.
It's a lot of psychic bullshit. So, Amuro and Sayla have a brief matchup with it. They separate, they attack it, they manage to blow it up, except the cockpit can separate off, and so
yep.
the little cockpit of this thing flies away as the scientists are like, drat, we were so close to making that prototype work.
Yeah.
And there ends that scene. This was literally yep. just for future plot.
Yeah. Which I'm fine with.
That's fine with that too, yeah. I firmly believe in the power of setting your shit up a ways earlier, so that when you call back on it, the people who remember feel way cooler.
And the people like me who forgot don't notice, so it's cool.
Exactly. So,
win-win.
Win-win. Sayla and Amuro proceed to Green Goblin back to White Base, and White Base...
Which...
Yes.
I still maintain Green Goblin on the G Fighter is the best use of the G parts.
100%, you are right. It makes less sense in space.
Look, just hold on to it and go. Like, in my opinion, it should like attach to the Gundam's back, like fucking Power Ranger giant Zord thingy.
Yeah.
Just attach to the back and rock it around like a fucking jetpack.
That's still my favorite piece of mobile suit design from Mobile Fighter G Gundam. Most of the cockpits are the backpack modules, and the backpack yeah. modules come out and fold down to become planes and cars and shit. Except then the little cockpit part itself, where the pilot is driving the plane or the car, tilts downwards and inserts as a backpack into the Gundams in G Gundam, and it's sick as hell. And honestly, I wish every Gundam did it that way. That's a real fun way of doing it. Instead, we have a weird torso-splitting thing that I still don't understand.
Not talking about.
Anyway, so, White Base pulls up to Side 6, more accurately...
Like, what up?
Yeah, more accurately, the border of Side 6. There's a whole... apparently they just have, like, a big sphere of lights around them as a fence, where it's like, hey, If you cross this point, no more warring. Can't have war past these lights. Arbitrary, but sure.
Yeah, I still have this thing of, like, who fucking enforces this?
Well, apparently...
Like, they have no fucking UN. Like, there's no coalition. There's just two sides to this fucking war.
That is what
Someone takes the shit over.
Yeah, I am wondering how Side 6 maintains this neutrality, like, functionally. Because over the course of this episode, like, Bright has a throwaway line in like, a couple of minutes, how if they break the rules, they'll have to pay a heavy fine. Who are you paying this fine to? Because from my point of view, me Fuzzy, either one of these sides could walk into Side 6 and go, we own this now, and there's nothing you can do about it. If you'd like to take up arguments, I have this fine young brunette man here in a 8-story tall white giant robot ready to issue some colonialism on you motherfuckers. And I don't see a lot of people going, I would like to take issue.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's whatever. The fucking Minovsky particles or something.
Fucking Minovsky particles are keeping everyone in line. And it's fine. So, they start pulling into Side 6 proper, and a little ship pulls up, and some dudes in really cool-looking green spacesuits. I really like those spacesuit designs. That's all I want to say about them. They've got a cool angled visor. It's just a good look. A couple of these cool spacesuit guys jump aboard White Base, with their permission, and enter, and Bright greets them. The first one introduces himself as Cameron Bloom, the Side 6 prosecutor. Hey, remember next time on the... remember the previous... times next time when I said we'd meet a guy named Cameron and he's real fucking important. I wonder who he is.
Do I talk about this now or do I wait until
Mariah
shows up?
Wait until the official reveal.
Okay.
So apparently he walks around and puts a bunch of what appear to be washi tape seals over all of the guns, essentially to prevent their use and show that if someone does use this gun, there is evidence of it. And there is a penalty of fine, which apparently is very expensive. Cameron also informs Bright that they can't repair White Base here, as that would technically count as assisting their war effort.
Yep.
Bright doesn't like this, but accepts it and takes them to the bridge. On the bridge, Sayla and Amuro are discussing the Bra Bro with everyone who's on the bridge. You know, Mirai, Fraw, the kids, the two dudes in the fucking upper cockpit part. Whoever happens to be around. Frankly, I'm shocked they didn't just start accosting people and being like, what do you think of this? They don't. But, Cameron gets shown in, Bright shows him around, they begin the actual docking procedure, and the camera shot shows Mirai in the foreground and Cameron in the background as Cameron looks at Mirai and slowly comes to a realization. Cameron goes, Mirai, holy shit, it's you, you're alive, fucking hugs her, is like super handsy with her, she's like, oh shit, Cameron, I was not expecting you on this bridge, hey, she does seem happy to see him, it's not an awkward meeting, and in fact, it seems quite pleasant and nice, by all accounts. Bright does give Cameron a, hey, she's piloting, and he's like, you're right, my bad.
Yeah. Like, motherfucker, giant ship!
Yeah. He then proceeds to back off a little bit, but does rest his hand on Mirai's forearm pretty much the whole time she's piloting.
She needs that to pilot!
I figure he's not putting a lot of pressure. Point being, Bright looks over and is visibly consterned, and let me tell you, the consternation is probably not coming from a commanding officer position, if you catch my meaning.
No.
I'll Let me get to just before Slegg shows up, and then yeah. I will release the dogs. So, okay. Cameron and Mirai share a brief backstory conversation about how they had to split due to the war happening, and yep. Cameron was super worried about her. We learn that essentially what happened was when war broke out, they were both in space and were planning on getting married, but when war happened, she ended up inside 7, and he ended up inside 6. They both immigrated, legally and stuff, all that. That's the gist. He really wants her to stay, and all this jazz, and she's kind of like, I don't know about that. Cameron was clearly super worried about her, and she laments that mayhaps their engagement was just to please their parents. Who we still yeah. aren't sure what Mirai's dad does. Wait, he was like an ambassador or something.
Yeah, someone important.
It's heavily implied Cameron's dad is currently part of the political elite here on side 6, which I'm going to guess yep. means he had some position of some power. And Cameron is like, no, wait, come home with me and let's have dinner and blah, 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 all this other stuff. He gets interrupted, yep. but first I'm going to interrupt yeah. myself and let Chris go.
So, let's talk about this for a second. Did you happen to notice what Cameron looks like? Does he look like a goddamn middle manager to you?
He looks like a brunette with glasses bright. Yes.
Yes. Fucking Mirai has a type. And that type is a fucking pencil pushing middle manager type. With the receding hairline and a weak chin. And like, go, Mirai. The only caveat she has is must also be willing to fight for your beliefs, which one of these people has.
Yes.
But anyways, he's like, so that's pretty much all I want to say is how similar this man is to Bright physically. Mm-hmm. But then, so he's like being weirdly aggressive, and from afar, you might see it as, because you don't know these two people are engaged, right. And even if you did, he's being weirdly, like, kind of aggro.
Yeah, he's being very, like, he really wants her to go with him, which, in yeah. the context of the conversation, sort of makes sense. Like,
yeah, but her,
if I met my fiancé, even if it was like an arranged marriage kind of situation for the first time in the better part of a year after worrying she was dead, I might have a similar reaction, I'll admit.
But the problem here is, his body language is very aggressive, and Mirai's body language is very much, no thank you.
And so are knight in shining armor.
Well, now hold on, amen.
Save the day.
As
a big meaty hand suddenly appears from off screen, grabs the glasses off Cameron's face, and then lightly hooks him. When I say lightly,
just
I don't
light jab dunk.
Well, okay, this light jab sends Cameron literally flying into white base.
Well, I'll say something.
They are in zero gravity, though.
Yeah, and if you've never been, I'll say if you've never been hit in the nose, a light tap in the nose is enough to be like, hey,
yeah,
what the fuck? Bad. Don't do that.
I know.
And he does like rabbit punch him in the fucking nose.
Yes, he does like rabbit punch him in like the nose or like the cheekbone. It's a place where you will be stunned and will fall backwards,
it was,
which if you have the advantage of zero gravity, you'll just fly into the nearest wall.
With the size difference of this fucking nerd and the fucking Slegger Law.
And the big meat man Slegger Law.
The punch was definitely enough to, like, he was definitely, like, obviously, like, I'm not trying to hurt you, but you need to fucking pay attention.
Yes. I'd be willing to bet if Slegger Law punched you in zero gravity full force, you would fly just forever. You would not stop until gravity found you. Slegger does this and proceeds to float upwards, and I'm gonna say this now, proceeds to put himself at a stop in probably one of the coolest ways I've ever seen, because he does this punch thing while flying directly upwards, perpendicular yeah. to the surface that Mirai and Cameron are standing on. They're at the edge of a balcony, though, and there is a bit of, like, railing with some, like, cloth railing, or a chain or something, or a wire,
yeah.
Going from post to post. And Slegger, as he's going up, does this little punch thing, and then uses his foot to catch himself on the yeah. wire, and pull himself back down to land
gently. This entire scene would be so much different if he missed with his foot and
just kept going! Now that said, because he pulled it off and looked cool as shit doing it, our Matthew McConaughey comparison is not without reason.
No.
It was cool.
He does say something like, I hate to see women being bothered by men or something
yes,
like that.
Yes, he says the most hypocritical shit.
And I'm like, Slegger, fuck off.
Yes. It's a very eye-rolly moment as he goes, I don't like it when a lady clearly showing she's not interested and the guy keeps going. Slegger. Mr. Law. Lieutenant Law. Lieutenant but- Slegger Law. Have you looked in a reflection lately? Not even a mirror. Just a reflective surface. A still pond. Maybe your visor. Maybe Amuro's eyes. Anything. Please exercise introspection. For once in your goddamn strong-jawed life.
I bet you, like, a second before this scene happened, he's off-screen saying, like, oh, yeah, here's my chance.
Wait for it, wait for
I refuse to admit Slegger Law's a good person.
Yeah.
He's going to have to do a lot more to make up for his introduction, because he's such a slimy piece of shit. So, anyways, he's like, hey, don't be a fucking dick. And Cameron's like, okay, I'm sorry. I got a little excited there. And Mirai was like, oh, Slegger. Oh. it's not like that. It's okay.
Yes.
Please don't murder this nerd.
Yeah, please don't beat up my nerdy boyfriend. God, yeah, Slegger really is just the infinite jock man, isn't he?
Yeah. Not a fan.
So, Cameron does legitimately apologize. Now that I'm, like, looking back on the episode, because, like, I just finished this episode, so I'm kind of processing as I talk here, but I'm realizing that every single time Cameron gets called out for something, he apologizes and backs down, which, on first read, appears just like he's very aware of his own shit and, like, is just like, yeah, I was kind of acting a little weird. There is that, but on the other side, I feel like it's more aimed to be read as, like, he's a bitch. He just won't stand up for himself.
Yeah.
Which...
Yeah, you're right. You know what? I think I agree with you, because I had the same thing of, like, oh, he's realizing he's getting overexcited or whatever. But I think you're right, because we'll get to it later. That's the main point of contention between them.
Yeah.
I've already mentioned it a couple times. It's just like, Mariah into no neutral boys.
Yes.
And he a neutral boy.
Yeah, Mariah demands some strong convictions out of her men.
Yeah. I get the... Well, you know what? I'll save this for when we get to it. Because we've still got to get fucking Amuro's shit to...
we've got
so much.
Yeah, so... we cut over to Char meeting Zabi's second-in-command, the titular from the episode, Konskin, who I didn't catch his name the first time in the episode, because it doesn't get said very often, so I just called him that blue fuck most of the time.
Yeah.
Because he, all his hair
this
is
man,
blue.
And this man looks like... he ate like Ramba Ral ate. Like, Ramba Ral obviously ate with his men and ate a lot and ate good, but also doesn't do any of the physical exertion that Ramba did.
It's, you know how in Saints Row, the, like, the body triangle, where it's like, there's skinny, muscle, and fat. Like, that's the three options, right?
Yeah.
Ramba Ral exists on, like, 90% muscle, a little bit of extra weight thrown in.
Yeah.
He's got that dad bod, he's got that strong dad bod going on.
Yeah. He's a thick dad.
Yeah, it's Mr. Izumi type of shit, right? From Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah.
This guy is just weight. This guy is if Ramba Ral had blue hair and did absolutely nothing.
In fact, I'm trying to remember. I don't know if he gets out of his chair in this episode.
He does. He does twice. Okay. All
right.
But yeah, so we meet Konskin for the first, like, actual time. Char is meeting him, and I can sum up this scene as Char out-smugs the fucker and which, leaves.
I mean, that's what Char do.
That is what Char does, but it's even more delicious in this scene, I think, because the guy, Konskin power trips super hard on Char, because he is a superior officer to Char, and Char's clapback is just, you shouldn't bully your juniors, sir. Which is just, like, the most elegant removal of the white satin glove, followed by slap. Followed by throwing that glove away and getting a new clean glove.
Because it has touched the impure.
Yes. Like, that's how tasty that line was for me. Just the smuggest fuck I have ever seen. Char as Nabel, you beautiful bastard. So, it's real good. Char agrees, like, okay, yeah, I'll go back to the Zanzibar and I'll watch you work. I will let you take the lead, sir. And leaves. As he leaves, Konskin and his second-in-command have a brief chat of, like, why does he never take off that mask? To which the second goes,
what's he got to hide?
A lot! the answer is a lot! So, and we'll get to that when, Chris? When will we get to that? What's our meme for the last 9 episodes?
Later!
There it is. So, I can't believe, like, it's very funny seeing how fucking dense these last 9 episodes are. They are so fucking dense.
Yeah.
So, almost as dense as one Mr. Amuro Ray. So, Konskin and his second are like, does he have a weird burn scar, or is he hiding something? They're pretty sure he's hiding something. So, we immediately cut to Char, who hides something and tells Mulligan, I remind you, Mulligan is his second in command, and
which,
I note, longest surviving.
Yeah, I'm going to say, Mulligan has been around for a fucking while, y'all.
Yeah, he's got 5 episodes on him now.
Like, most of the time, Char is like, leave his second in command to die.
Char is running through them the way, I don't have an apt description. He goes through those things like I go through tea. It's a lot. I drink a lot of tea, if you don't know me personally. I don't drink coffee, I drink tea. That made more sense if you knew me. I'm bad at podcasting, so.
We're both bad, it's fine.
Yes. So Char tells Mulligan to send a message to Caecilia. It's a weird coded message. We don't know what it means. And I honestly immediately forgot what the words were. It was 2 words. That's all. So.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I didn't expect you to. It's just like, yeah, he sends a secret message and doesn't tell Mulligan what it means.
Nope.
Meanwhile, the White Base crew gets onto the side proper, where they all experience an Earth-like environment again. The narrator comes back and is like, this is how sides work. They're a big cylinder that spins. It's not rocket science. It's a spinny cylinder. The cylinder spins so good, you get gravity on the edge.
Centripetal force.
Centripetal force. Is it centripetal or is it centrifugal?
It's always pronounced centrifugal. I've always heard it, like, but it's spelled centripetal. So, fuck if I know, bro.
Cool.
it's got spinny gravity!
It's got spinny gravity. So
it's been good. Make flat.
Apparently, everyone kind of splits off on their own ways, and for some reason, Amuro goes with Frobo, the kids, and motherfucking Chef.
Yeah, you remember Salt Guy?
Remember Salt Guy? He's back! He's still here! He's been cooking food the whole time!
You fucking slept on Salt Guy. Salt Guy's here. Salt Guy shows up and be like, what, motherfucker? What? Salt Guy didn't die?
What was Salt Guy's promotion? I want to know. What is he now?
Oh my god!
Is he the General. Master Chef? He's get it? Because Master Chief is an...
Master
it's a,
Chef,
it's a
yeah.
fun little, it's a fun little callback to those days when Halo memes his name's were John. A thing. He's the 117th of his line. So, Halo jokes. Man, I wish that series maintained quality. So, story writing.
I don't know, I stopped playing after Reach.
That, you, yeah, I played 4, you didn't miss much. And then I read what happened in 5, it got worse. Like, it got way worse. It was...
Oh, no.
It's bad. If you live and work at 343, I'm sorry to disparage your work, but I don't like it, and I have some notes.
Okay.
Anyway, so, Amuro's hanging out with these guys. They just get groceries. They're loading them up into a Jeep when he looks across the... Amuro looks across the street, and he sees his dad. Commercial.
Yep.
Stop! Do we have any reviews?
Yes, we do. We have two, one of which is very important to you. I'll go first, because I have to link this to you.
Yes.
So I want a big thank you to Ganglo-Saxon, who left a review. Apparently, he has been trying to leave reviews and couldn't figure out how, because iTunes is a weird, arcane beast. He says some pretty glowing things. Both of our reviews this one are very wordy, which I was very into, but I'm not reading it on the podcast.
Yes.
But both of you today, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Our second one is one I actually want to directly address. This one's Burn Brightly Zaku by Sheena Obi. Thank you for your review, first of all. They say, you know, it's a fun thing, it's got a lot of neat stuff. And then I'm going to steal this opportunity to soapbox a bit and say that I actually found myself disliking IBO more and more as it went on. He says more stuff there. I just want to directly talk to you real quick. Honestly, I agree.
Get right up in your...
I understand where you're coming from. And yes, I do agree. The second season is a much weaker experience than the first season of IBO. But I still think it's one of the best reboots of Mobile Suit Gundam, like, of the thematic elements, and I think especially the first season, and elements of the second season, too, take a lot of these elements from this original Mobile Suit Gundam, 0079, that we're doing right now, and redoes them and remixes them in a lot of interesting ways. Like, it's funny we're doing this episode, and you left this review at this time, right? Because... I'm particularly remembering there's an entire part in IBO where they go to a neutral party space station and end up having to fight war there. It's like almost one-to-one this episode. It's just interesting to see those reboots and those remixes. I will agree with you. A lot of character developments get sacrificed for cheap death. I think IBO, especially in the second season, becomes a great example of that lesson of death stops character development because they're dead. You can't keep going from there without removing the stakes of death. I'm looking at you, Dragon Ball Z. I still think it's a really good show, though, but I respect your opinion, and I see where you're coming from. That's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to say that also in case you, for some reason, checked out the reviews on our podcast and then listened 33 episodes in and were having questions about why I say IBO is good shit. Anyway, that's my soapbox to your soapbox.
Whoop. I fucking shouted
it's
too early.
It's fine. Happens to me all it's time. Fine. I'm just, the audio is talking over the audio of the actual episode now. God, I would hate that if that happened in, like, an actual TV program. If, like, the ad was... the audio of the ad was still over the actual episode.
That happens in podcasts sometimes, and I understand. Look, it's free fucking podcast. It's fine. But every time it does, it fucking makes my brain hurt. Anyways, we come back...
Yes.
To this.
To the exact same scene.
Fuzzy, I need you to look me in the eyes.
Yeah.
Just look north and slightly east of where you're at now. Look me in the eyes.
I don't know which direction that is.
We are an hour into this.
Yeah.
And halfway through the episode, and my food is here, so we have to fucking get through this.
We will go fast. We will eat ass, and we will do 9/11. So.
Well, was that last one?
Don't worry about it. So, we come back to the exact same scene as Amuro runs across the street to fucking talk to his dad, who he thought was dead.
Yeah! And, like, they keep missing each other or whatever. He gets on a bus.
Yeah, this scene goes on a while.
Oh, it's so long. Also, I've been trying to pay more attention to the music cues since you do such a good job of it now. And we get, like, a weird, like, smooth jazz version of the end theme, the Amuro song.
It was Amuro. I wasn't sure if it was Amuro or if it was Moeagare, but either way, it's on a recorder?
It's so fucking
bad
weird.
Clarinet or something. It's really weird.
And the music note is like childhood friends budding romance.
Yeah.
Like that's what it feels like.
It's a weird vibe. I don't know what was up with that one. This is a weird musical cue.
Amuro fucking beats ass and chases down this goddamn bus on foot.
Yes, he chases this bus down. It's not clear how long he ran, because on one hand, if the time we see on screen is indeed the whole time he's running, then this bus makes a lot of stops.
Yeah.
And also his dad's really lazy, because that was like, maybe
I think
a
it's
mile?
That one. Yeah, I think his dad just literally took the bus for two stops.
Yeah.
So he finally get. Oh, this is fucking the worst.
It's been
forever ago, but I seem to remember Amuro's dad being kind of a dick when we met him the first time.
Well, the first time but we met Amuro's dad, admittedly, I'll remind you.
Yeah, a war is on.
Yes, literally, war has arrived at side 7. Oh fuck.
Yeah.
So
that's what I was gonna say.
Tem in the first episode is very to the point. He's very like, I have a job and I need you to be safe. Go here now. And he fucking goes and he does his business with the V project. And a bunch of stuff happens and side 7, Char blows a hole in side 7 and Tem Ray is sucked into space. That's the last thing we saw of this man. 31 episodes.
By the way,
ago.
if you think that gets explained here,
yeah, it does actually get explained here. It's
oh, it does?
Yeah,
I missed that then.
Yeah, so Amuro catches up to Temre.
Yeah, his name's Tem. Very sad. We find out Tim's a dick.
Yes,
because Amuro is obviously like distraught. He's like, "Dad!" And, like Amuro's so excited to see his dad still alive, right?
Right.
And Tem is just like, "Oh, Amuro, okay," and then just walks inside.
Yeah. Oh, Amuro, hi.
Follow me.
So they go inside. Tem appears to be living in a warehouse in the middle of a scrapyard. Yeah, they chill for a bit, and Tem is like, how's the Gundam? His first question is,
yeah, it's
how's
bad.
The Gundam? Amuro answers, curiously and trepidatiously. Tem takes him home, hands him a weird device that Amuro takes one look at this device and goes, that's not a functioning piece of technology. That's junk, and I can tell it's junk. And he looks at his dad, and in the Japanese, at least, he puts two and two together and realizes that dad is suffering from brain damage due to oxygen deprivation. So Tem was sucked into space in a spacesuit. This means he can live for a while, but at a certain point, you start running low on oxygen, and, like, that doesn't kill you immediately. dying from oxygen deprivation in a spacesuit is a very long and very painful process. Well, actually, it's not painful. Mm-hmm. It's a very long, choking process. And then when you fall asleep, you're still alive for a long while. It takes a long time to die from self-inflicted carbon dioxide poisoning due to such an environment, right?
Yeah.
So Tem clearly got rescued at some point and brought back, and he's not in great shape. I really hope the military's paying him a decent pension.
No, he's obviously gone off his rocker a little bit.
Yes.
Amuro even tries to be like, hey, I met Mom on Earth, and I think in the English version he doesn't even fucking respond.
Wow.
He doesn't react to that very much.
In the Japanese...
He's kind of like, whatever.
In the Japanese, when Amuro brings that up, he says, oh... Yes, when the war is over, we should visit Earth sometime. And then just stops talking. And it's like, oh, buddy. Tem is clearly super far gone. And it's honestly really sad. Like, Amuro's already been suffering hard. And
His reunion with his mom didn't go how he wanted it to. His reunion with his dad sucks ass.
I would almost argue that the boy has... lost both parents twice.
Yeah, because his mom disowns him, right? It's been forever.
Mid-key. I won't say high-key, I won't say low-key. Key. Key disowns him. And yeah, his dad's crazy now because brain damage. Literally brain damage from oxygen deprivation.
Yeah.
It's not great. Amuro runs outside, begins crying, throws the piece of junk against the ground, does not bother even taking it back home. I dropped a pencil. And, it has a breakdown in the middle of the street. It's not a great day for Amuro Ray.
No, I feel real fucking bad.
It's
a weird kind of, like, whiplash, because last episode he just fucking...
Well,
is an unstoppable force?
Yes, an unstoppable battlefield demon god.
And then in this one, you're like, oh wait, no, he's fucking 16,
right? Which is,
and he needs his fucking, he needs a parent. Hey, goddammit.
Hold on, wait, what was that you said? You said he was an unstoppable battlefield god, and then you were reminded he's 16 because we're reminded that the main theme of the show is that fucking children shouldn't fucking fight in wars.
Yes, obviously, Fuzzy.
I'm a wee. Hey, it's the theme.
If y'all didn't know, Mobile Suit Fandom is categorically against child soldiers.
Yeah, which is really funny. But given this child soldier is a
fucking badass.
Violet Evergarden, really sad. So, on Netflix, highly recommend. So,
she's got robot arms.
She does. And I cried on episode 3. Apparently,
I've only seen episode 1 and 2. I need to make it to 3, I guess.
Yeah, I shed my first actual tear on 3. I literally, all 3 of those episodes was me almost crying. I've been on the edge for 3 episodes, and finally episode 3 was like... single tier. I'm expecting 4. It's just gonna be like, by the end of the season, I'm gonna guess I'm just gonna be weeping openly the whole 20 minutes. So,
Gundam. Anyways, Gundam.
Amuro star swipes himself back to White Base, apparently, is seen on screen talking to Bright. Like, he's on a view screen, and we're in the bridge of White Base, and Bright is talking at the view screen.
Oh, that makes so much more sense. We had a time skip. Yes. In my head, he was still, like, he was still on side 6.
No.
And they were like, come get here now, what the fuck? And then he ends the call.
And he's there.
Turns and says, okay, go.
No. There's clearly a time skip, because Amuro is pictured in White Base standing next to Kai.
Right.
So that's my clue.
Makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. I'm glad to help you clear that up.
Thank you. I was very confused. I must have looked. This is the problem with anime. This is why I can't watch the subtitle version. Is I look away from the fucking screen too much.
Yes.
I just get so, like, it's not even looking at anything interesting. I look at the fucking wall. Like, oh, look at that wall. And then look back like, oh, fuck, what did I miss? Who's that? What happened?
I can't help you there, buddy. What's on you? So Bright chides him for his lateness, and we don't address him yet, but he's on screen. The most Monopoly Man looking fuck I have ever seen. Like, the guy's is smoking a cigarette, and he's named Mr. Bergamino.
If I'm recalling correctly, he is also a sphere.
He is also quite rotund, yes. The theme is guys with cool colored hair who are rotund this episode, apparently. Yeah. With facial hair. That is also an important fact.
And also another accountant type.
Oh, yes. Mr. Bergamino, apparently. Whatever you're imagining right now is probably right. If you've never seen this show, when we say the rotund gentleman Mr. Bergamino, you're right, yeah. Yep, that's it. That's him. You did it. I'm proud of you. So, apparently Mr. Bergamino here knows a place where Whitebase can get some repairs. It's rather suspiciously convenient, but oh well. Bright orders Amuro and the gang to stand in front of Whitebase, essentially, and lead them out of the dock. They do.
Just float. Yep. Float ahead of us.
Yep. They do.
We also have a weird spaceship with them.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is. I'm not sure if that's just like a leading vessel or what, or if it's just a really off-model G-armor. I literally don't know.
Oh. Anyways, it's not important. It doesn't come up.
Slegger calls Amuro and is like, "Hey, buddy, you doing okay?" Well, excuse me, he says, "Hey, boy, you doing okay?" And Amuro's like, "Yes, and stop calling me boy." To which Slegger's like, "Oh-ho. Oh."
Yeah, I think my thing with Slegger is he's one of those people that, like, takes a long time to acclimate to. Like, I have friends, I've made friends like this, where, like, they just fucking like to push buttons. Like, not to piss you off, just to find out where the buttons are.
Right.
Like, they just kind of, like, walk around and find these buttons, and then they're excited they found the button, but then they will back off. And I don't have any fucking patience for that most of the time.
Yeah, no, that's a terrible trait in a human being. If you find yourself being like Slegger Law, change. But
yeah, try not to push people's. Yeah. Don't try to push people's buttons.
You can push your friends' buttons, but like that's a third date kind of thing, not a first date.
That's like
not a first day on the job kind of thing.
Right. But anyways.
Now that said, I'd almost argue that Slegger Law would argue most things I consider a third date kind of thing or more of a first 5 minutes kind of thing, but that's because Slegger Law is actually Matthew McConaughey, but in space. So Slegger backs off, he does laugh, and then complies with Amuro's request, and we cut over to some Zeeks. Who spot Whitebase from afar and proceed to shoot a signal flare. Amuro spots the signal flare, because it's a fucking signal flare, and we learn from Konskin that Bergamino is in fact a war profiteer who sells these repairs to both sides. Konskin smiles wide at the chance to not only fuck up Whitebase and show Char what for, but also murk a dishonorable dude's shit.
Yeah.
That's it. He's just happy to be here. Yeah, so
glad to get invited.
Yep. He orders 12, count 'em, 12, count 'em, 12 Rickdoms in addition to his 3 battleships. I said the number 3 times because we're going to keep track.
Damn. Yeah.
And I'm not kidding. This isn't. That's actually a thing that happens in like 30 seconds. Amuro keeps track.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is, you said it earlier. They're about to fucking, they're just going to show that, Amuro just can't be fucked with.
Yes.
You do not fuck with Amuro. Like, Amuro is
don't.
You fucking kill him in his sleep.
Yeah.
That's how you get rid of Amuro, right?
Assassinate him. Stop.
You wait for
him
to get his heart crushed by one of his parents. And then you fucking slit his throat.
Yeah. Like, honestly, Char could have taken off his mask and wandered around Side 6 and found Amuro and just, like, shanked him a few times.
Yeah.
Series over. We're done. He could have done that easily. No one knows Char's fucking face.
Also, as far as I can tell, unless I'm remembering correctly, Amuro doesn't have any hand-to-hand combat proficiencies.
Nah,
really.
He's just like, a punk ass. Unless he transferred the concepts he learned from, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, Kukuru's Doan.
Ah, you fucking dick! Why would you do this to me, you fuzzy? I trusted you. I fucking... Oh! Oh!
Unless for some reason... Amuro mentally transferred the concepts of mobile suit martial arts to his normal martial arts, which I doubt one involves joysticks and the other one involves actually throwing a fucker.
I imagine he is always going to have some sort of edge due to his precognition. But like, you can't fucking... I don't care how much you feel a bullet coming at your ass, like, his reflexes aren't fast enough to get out of the way of a bullet. Oh, god damn it. Alright, let's keep going then.
So, Char is watching from the Zanzibar, which is apparently far away. It's not clear immediately in this scene, but it is clear later, so I'm just being clear now. Char watches from the Zanzibar some distance away. He's not on the red ship. That's where Konskin is for some fucking reason. White Base begins docking with this space dock that Mr. Bergamino owns, apparently, until suddenly the dock is riddled with laser holes. Mirai immediately pulls a hard left as Bergamino grabs onto Bright and is like, "My beautiful dock, you've got to save it," and kind of move out of the way so they stop shooting the dock. They don't stop shooting the dock. But they also keep shooting at White Base.
Yeah.
Of course, Amuro, being outside and in front of White Base, is the first to encounter the Skirts, the Rickdoms. And boy, oh boy, does he start strong, because...
He encounters them hard and fast.
Oh.
It's bad.
Amuro lifts some Skirts hard and fast, if you catch our meaning. He kills three men.
Yep.
In as many seconds.
And just, again, I keep talking about, but it's the thing, right? It's the thing we're getting into right now, is just how crazy he is.
Yes.
I want to just reiterate a major obstacle for them when they started was three mobile suits. And it took White Base and all of their mobile suits to barely scrape out.
And it's now, been a month and a half. I really want to make that clear. This entire show takes place in the span of a month and a half.
And now more advanced mobile suits are a warm-up for Amuro. He's terrible. He's a menace.
He is literally a menace, yes. It's... Just Jesus Christ, like... Literally, he kills three Doms with as many trigger pulls. Hey, remember earlier when we constantly bitched about Amuro wasting ammo? When was the last time we did that?
He hasn't ran out of ammo since he got to Earth, I think.
Exactly.
I think he has. He just doesn't complain about it as much. He'll just drop the thing and grab a different weapon.
He also doesn't complain about it, but also, literally, he sees the Rickdoms, one, behind the back, two, behind the other back, three, points it forward, keeps going.
A lot of this episode, a lot of these Rickdoms, it's probably just for reused animation purposes, but a lot of Rickdoms get bisected in this one.
Yeah, a lot of Rickdoms blow up in half, which is mostly reused animation. However, Amuro himself gets a lot of not reused animation this episode, which I'm pretty sure we'll end up reusing by the end of the series.
Right.
White Base.
He just... Yeah, White Base, and you mentioned it here, and I fucking can't for the life of me remember what it was. But so White Base goes around the dock and is returning fire, and we get a song that I haven't heard before.
Yeah, I haven't either. It's like a really funky guitar?
Yeah, that's it. It's like, yes, it's like a weird... I liked it.
I did like it. I'm not sure if I found it tonally appropriate.
No, this episode, the music director for this episode was probably high. Like, we know all the animators are doing coke just to keep up with the drawing schedule.
Right.
But I feel like the music director in this one was just super high. It was just like, this will work.
This one was, this one's music was weird. Sorry, Domino.
I'm sure Tomino didn't do it.
This one was the one Tomino personally did. This was the director's cut of the special effects. So,
okay.
we cut over to White Base, who drifts around the dock and begins returning fire on the fleet. White Base kills one battleship outright, and we cut to Cameron, who's some distance away in a different ship, noticing this battle happen. He's coming into view of it. He's a little paranoid because he's not sure who told Zeon about this.
Yeah.
We cut back over to Amuro, who gets his number up to 6. Yes, he mercs 3 more dudes on screen in as fine. Many trigger pulls. And
that's
as
half,
many seconds.
By the way.
Yeah.
That's half.
Slegger takes out one. Kai takes out another one, and then the arm that of the one Kai blows up drifts down and like lands on
gingerly
the gun cannon's head, and just like
just
drifts
gingerly
down.
Gets a face touch.
Yeah.
It's so tender and loving.
Like, I don't know what to make of that. Like, why does it gently drift down and just touch Kai's head? And then Kai does nothing about it. He just lets it happen. You're in the middle of a fight!
My favorite part of this episode.
What are you doing?
An animator did that on purpose. That wasn't... That took a lot of money to do.
Yeah, that took time. Like, that arm drifts down and, like, you see its articulation as it lands on the head and drifts downward. Like, it's not just a single item that gets pivoted on an axis. It's animated and well.
It's the disembodied mobile suit limb version of like gently caressing his cheek.
Well, I'd argue more like it's kind of a top of head like
I said version.
Yes, sure.
I thought it was like a good boy.
You blowed me up. Good job.
Anyways, it was fucking great.
Kai gets one. Sayla gets one. Amuro then kills 2 more, and then a 3rd, and then he stabs the last one, and that's 9. Amuro killed 9 Rickdoms in about as many seconds.
This is like, I think, like literally like a minute and a half, 2 minutes of combat, I think?
If we take what we see as law, as like that amount of time has passed, then Amuro... Like, I don't think there's a way to properly show off how fucking terrifying that would be to bear witness to. Because you send out 12 of your best dudes. Because Zeon seems to lean, at least among mobile suit pilots, fairly meritocratically.
Yeah.
And so Konskin sent out... ostensibly his 12 best dudes in 12 top of the line advanced mobile suits equipped with rocket launchers, something almost no other mobile suit has, low payload rocket launchers, and like one of the strongest melee weapons in the show. The high heat swords are canonically some of the strongest swords. And Amuro takes out 9 in as many seconds. That's like a fucking grenade, except it's man-shaped. Excuse me, boy-shaped. There is a 16-year-old human grenade.
Yeah.
And he works for the Fetties.
I I kind of like thought of this as like, you ever play like a real time strategy? Not really, but more like a 4X game.
Yeah.
Or a grand strategy game, yeah. And you like something that has random number generators fights, right. And you like send your overwhelming force to take something, and then they just roll really fucking well the first three rounds, and you like cannot hit the retreat button fast enough,
right.
And then they all die.
Yep.
That's what just happened. Like, oh shit, fuck, goddammit!
I'd almost argue this as like, have you ever leveled up a real early age unit in Civ to be like super high level? So you end up with, like, one samurai versus, like, eight tanks, and the samurai wins because he's level 5 billion because you made him the moment you could and he hasn't died. And you're now in the year 5,000. That's kind of what Amuro's like. Konskin is, understandably, terrified. Which... it's kind of interesting to see this from a commander for the first time, because Konskin is the first commander we see on screen really and truly terrified of what Amuro can do.
Yeah, this dude's shitting his pants.
Yeah. Char pulls up in the Zanzibar, and White Bay starts getting worried. Bergamino gets even more scared for his doc, to which Bright responds by telling him to shut the fuck up. Char notices that Cameron's ship, Cameron, of course, is in a side six civilian ship. Char notices the ship is entering the field and proceeds to radio the rest of the Zeon guys to stop firing at all costs because no one wants to commit this particular war crime today. They do, thankfully. Yes. And Cameron's pilot chastises Cameron and is like, I didn't sign up for nearly dying. To which Cameron responds, my fiance's on White Base. To which the pilot goes, oh.
Ooh.
Oh. All right. And we cut away.
Yeah, it's a hard cut to, like suddenly, the battle in this one took like 3 seconds.
Yeah, it was a, we did an earlier one too, so we got the requisite amount of screen time fighting. I think.
So we cut, but we do hard cut to, like, post-battle.
Yes.
It's very hard. And it's Mariah and Cameron. And Cameron is like, hey, why don't you live with me on side six? And we'll do this and we'll do that. You can just come stay with me. It'll all be great. And she says, like, you're asking a lot of me. Because, like, again, Mariah's very, loyal to the war effort, the Federation war effort.
She
like,
believes
this means
the
a lot
Feddies
to her.
Are right. She really
and
truly does.
He is asking her to give up something very important to her. And so she looks at him, like, tearfully and says, you're asking me to give up a lot. What are you willing to do for me? And he responds, I'll ask my dad to help you get out of the military, basically.
Right.
Which is, he seems earnest. He seems genuine. He seems like he thinks that's what she wants. That's what's keeping her from doing it. He just doesn't understand that, no, it's she wants to save the fucking world.
In the Japanese, she has a line. The line I took away the most is, she says to him, you've spent the entire time running away from the war.
Yeah.
And then she doesn't finish the second clause, or at least I don't remember her saying it. Because she ran into it and is now piloting it. She is piloting the war effort. That's what that is.
Yeah.
And
she...
It's really clear, at least to me, that she does appreciate Cameron and does care about him. But that's as far as it goes. For her, White Base is... even earlier, Slegger has a throwaway line at the end of that conversation where he took his glasses, Cameron's glasses. He does give them back, by the way. He says, Mirai is like a mom to all of us on White Base, and we appreciate her a lot.
Yeah.
Which Honestly, Slager Law providing his skills of observation once again. He right, though.
Yeah.
She is second in command of this ship, uh-huh. and is very clearly... It seems she goes to the emotional impact much faster than Bright does, which is, especially in Japanese culture, a motherly role.
She's also arguably the most responsible person on there. Frabo's close.
Frabo is very close.
But she, the thing is, Frabo's capacity is limited on the ship. She's still, she doesn't have, well, I guess she's in comms now. So she has more responsibility.
She is an ensign. Well, excuse me, she's not. Yeah, answer, what I
mean
down.
Is, like, we just haven't seen it as much, is right. what I mean. Like, Mariah is the highest ranking, most responsible person.
Yes.
And so, like, I get it. She feels responsible. She also takes care of, she has many hats, I mean.
Yes.
Like, it's, if anybody here is, like, obviously, like, Amuro's, I think, like, it could be said that Amuro is here, to pilot the Gundam. Yeah. It's less about the war and more about I'm the pilot of the Gundam. This is what I do.
I'd like you to remember that phrase that you just said, because that's going to be an important thing
later.
Forever. Not just later, the infinitive the later. Like, Amuro forever.
like Bright has some duty. I feel like... Kai is in it to win it now, but he wasn't to begin with. I feel like it's apparent to me, like, Sayla's doing her own family bullshit, which now I think about it, maybe Sayla is also, like, morally a fetty. Like, is a fetty for a moral reason.
To me, I'd hard agree, and I'd say almost everyone on Whitebase we've seen is here because their moral convictions say they should be. Except for Amuro. Amuro...
He's piloting a Gundam.
Well, I feel like Amuro's thing is he doesn't have anywhere else he belongs.
Right.
Because mom doesn't think the way he does. Dad is insane. They were both dead for a while there, as far as he was concerned. And, yeah, so for him, the Fetties are very much where he belongs. Continue.
True. That was it. It's just that I feel like Mirai loves the Whitebase.
Yes.
And all the people on it. So while she does love Cameron, even if it was romantic love, which I'm not 100% sure it was, she seemed kind of hesitant for that, even though they were talking earlier.
Yeah.
I think she does love Cameron, but she's not a love struck child. She understands the importance of what she's doing, and that there are more people she loves on Whitebase, and she can save more of the people she loves. On Whitebase.
And arguably just save more people, because...
Right.
It's not great.
Oh, no. Anyways, she does fucking, like... He is like, I don't understand. Why doesn't that work? What do you mean? What did you actually want from
and
me?
It's actually
kind of heartbreaking.
It is.
Yeah.
She proceeds to end the conversation in a way I assume... is because Sayla entered her life, and that's why she's this fucking extra.
I would say she yeets off of screen, since you explain that to me later, but I think she's going too slow for a yeet.
She's too slow for a yeet, but she does very much jump off the top left of the screen and just keeps
and just
going
float away.
Slowly as Cameron
he's
calls,
begging.
Like, Cameron, come back.
What did I do wrong? Tell me what you want and I'll do it.
And
the problem is, she wants you to want things, you motherfucker.
Right. which, while a tropey story, is still a good trope.
I still felt for Cameron, I also feel for Mirai, because Mirai didn't want to break his heart. Mirai offered him a lifeline. She wanted him to say something to convince her to get off Whitebase. I don't think she understood that. I don't think there's anything he could have said to get her off of Whitebase, though.
I think both of the characters are incredibly sympathetic for very different reasons. And that said, I think Mirai, and because she's a protagonist especially, ends up far more empathetic for us.
Yeah.
Whereas Cameron... sympathy into pity.
And
Mirai also says it too. The other line that stuck with me is Mirai changed. And yeah. Mirai observes that it seems Cameron has not, despite war the last 9 months.
Yeah, Cameron wants to continue on pretending there's not sides to this.
Right.
Sides. Before we get into the next episode thing, I just want to say again, like, the second half of this series has been fucking great as far as, like, storytelling and emotional beats and, like, the whole thing. It really leveled up
right
halfway through it. And I'm really enjoying this fucking show right now.
Oddly, I'd almost argue this is the, curse of mecha anime, where, depending on the show, some shows start with no budget and then get budget later in, which I think is what I think they played way more carefully with their budget on this one, so they cheaped the first few and then got expensive in the back half. Other shows have the opposite problem, where they get their budget cut partway through. Evangelion! And thus they become way more introspective on that half of things to actually save money. And there's an argument that a lot of the introspection and character development that is poignant of the mecha genre is actually a budget concern, which is hilarious to me. That we don't have enough money, so we're gonna talk about character a lot. We're gonna talk about character a lot so we can save up for a lot of missiles on screen in a while. So many fucking missiles. And a weird synth guitar plays us out as Mirai drifts gently into... Why the fuck are so many rooms yellow?
It's yellow rooms, man. They calm you down.
They're for contrast, mostly. I'd be willing to guess it's great for contrast. Especially probably on older TVs. That might be something we're not thinking of. Did you know in, like, the Addams Family house is bright pink on the inside? Like, all the black and white TV shows have wild colors when you actually look at them with color.
Makes me so fucking happy, Fuzzy.
Right? So,
So, for those of you who don't know, I have two very distinct and warring factions within myself, which is, one, I am a terrible goth bitch, but also goddamn love neon colors.
So, yeah, you should take extreme solace in the fact that the Addams Family house, while being the peak of goth extraness, is also bright pink almost everywhere. Bright pink and yellow. Like, it's all pastels. It's great.
Oh, my fucking heart.
You're welcome.
Anyways.
Next episode, we meet Lala, probably the most fucking important character, second only to Amuro and Char. I'm not fucking kidding. Lala is so fucking important. God, they don't shut up about her forever. There are Lala references in UC96, in Unicorn. In Unicorn! I'm shocked there's not Lala shit in F97, and that's fucking 150 years after fucking... God, she's important.
So she's obviously psychic. She's a spooky psychic girl.
She's super spooky. They do, to use the proper trope name, they do kind of go magical Negro here, which isn't great. Lala is an Indian woman. But they do very much kind of go that magic Negro direction, which isn't great. That said, she gets she's really fucking important. She's really, really fucking important.
I mean, I haven't seen the episode yet, so I'm not sure the connotation. I think it's a little less... I'm fucking white as the goddamn piece of paper, but it feels to me like everybody, like, there's a lot of fucking magic people.
There is a lot.
But I guess they do put her in, they seem to be setting her up as a fucking guru of some sort.
Essentially.
I don't know. We'll get there when we get there. I'll let people who have a, more, like, I'm not the person to fucking tell people if that's okay or not, obviously.
This is also, you know, a 30-something-year-old show.
Yeah, it's still important to point out where they fuck up, though.
It's important to point out.
It's a problematic faith.
Not much we can do about it at this stage, though. Go back in time. Tell Tomino, hey, be careful.
I have a quick question, though.
Yes?
Has Char ever seen Amuro?
Yes.
Okay.
It was,
because they interact in this, and they're not trying to murder each other.
Yes, they interacted twice. Both of them at gunpoint, but they have interacted one-to-one twice. And there's also a strong implication that they can... Well, okay, in other Gundam shows, it's over a radio. I don't know if it's the radio or if it's psychic bullshit in this one, but they do have some talks here. Or they did have talks over comms, like in previous episodes. I'm pretty sure that, like, after this episode, though, every time they talk is psychic. I'm not sure about that, but I'm, like, half sure about that. We meet Char in person. Amuro meets Char and Lala. It's a whole thing. We get psychic. We're gonna get really psychic the rest of the show. And finally, we tip into the final lap of this fucking show. This is it, kids. Strap in and get ready for a major tonal shift. Next time on Mobile Suit Fandom, episode 34, A Fateful Encounter. Will you be able to survive?
Amuro...
I'm still really proud of my narrator voice on those readouts.
They're very good.
Well, I hope you enjoyed episode 33 of Mobile Suit Fandom. If you want to yell about how either of us are garbage, or that you like what we do, you can find us on Twitter with @MobileSuitPod, and our personal Twitters from there. Also, if you are new to Gundam as a whole and really want to give it a try, check out the official Gundam YouTube channel, Gundam Info. All one word. They have a bunch of shows, legally, for free. In addition, if you're cool with ads, you can watch a few non-UC timeline shows on Crunchyroll with ads. This is not a paid promotion. I just really want you to watch Gundam. Until next time, mech fans, remember, for the thousandth, millionth, billionth time, Amuro is so fucking deadly.